Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday, everybody. I hope you're all doing well. I hope you had a great week. And as always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. I know I'm such a creature of habit. Always. Hey, Rags, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine. How about you?
If I was any better,
I'd
be
better, I'd be clean.
Yep. You already know the answer, right? Because I think that's just the way I should be, you know? Wonderful. I'm always hopeful. Anyway, what a great night. I'm not crazy tired like last week. Although I do always yawn, I'm sorry. Nothing personal, everybody. It's not the company, it's the hour. So looks like we have a good board for tonight. And,
yes.
We should have some fun with it.
A wide variety of goodies.
Yeah, a little bit of everything on the board tonight, which I like, you know. That's what makes it kind of fun for me, because it's not any one specific thing, it's everything. Whatever they put up, that's what I'll take. You know how that works. But anyway, anything new? Anything particular going on? Any crazy contests you got running? What do you got for Sunday?
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. A little bit of a surreality in the the song itself and quite the lyrics to play with. Take a line, take a stand, and mix and match, have a bit of fun.
Very cool. Very cool. It should be a good contest. And everybody, did you hear that? Is it full? Is it full? Because I'm going to plug it if it's not. Anybody who wants to write for it. If the contest is full, just throw it on the top of the board. I mean, you know, what the heck? More the merrier. Isn't that what they say? Yes, that's what they say.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. But yes, so that's, well, that's good. That's good. And my last I heard, they were trying to get some rights for tonight after the show, night show. Is that true? And hello, Pam.
Hi, Dean. Hi, Rex.
Hey.
Good to hear you both. And, yes, we are looking for rights on Parts in Her Part Sync. So if you have something that fits, go ahead and put it on the topic board. There's two different contests running for it. The one is on angry grief, you know, being angry and sad at the same time. So, you know, whatever you have that even remotely relates to that topic. The other contest that Babbler has running is on children, like, you know, your thoughts about children in general, I guess. and that is open to pre-write. My thoughts on children are they taste like chicken. But, you know, that's just me. Okay, that was horrible.
You did. You did. We had to talk about children earlier today based on some prompts that we came across. We're going to keep those to ourselves for a while. But that's what came to mind. Oh, my God. No, so that's pretty funny, actually. It's great stuff. Anyhow, well, that's good. Maybe we can get a couple more rights for you and Babbler tonight. That'll be excellent. And let's see now. We have two more callers. So I'm going to pick up the first one. Hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party.
Good evening, Gene. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, Laurent.
Hey, Rex. Hey, Pam.
Laurent's like the prodigal son.
Good.
What'd you say, Pam?
I said, hi, Laurent. Good to hear you.
Well, it must have been a good to hear you part of it.
Good to hear all of you as well.
Shut, yep. God, you know, my ears are shut, I guess. And last but never least, we have Weaver of Dreams on the line. Hey, Kate, how are you tonight?
Hello, I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. Are you still on vacation?
Yes, I am. I'm still wide awake.
That's
quite scary.
Good for you. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's awesome. You having a good time?
Kate, well, those men aren't keeping you busy enough.
Sorry, what was that?
I said the Spanish men are not keeping you busy enough. You have time to call in.
Well, yes, I have to admit. I had the night off tonight.
Everybody has to rest once in a while.
Yes, you exactly. Know. We can get too much of a good thing.
That's right. And God rested on the seventh day, let's be real.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to get in trouble somewhere. Somehow. Oh, I can't get started on that. I'll be going to hell in a handbasket soon. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, so I'm glad everybody's here. And, well, not everybody's here, but we got a nice crowd, and I like it. So I guess maybe we should get this party started. What do you think?
Oh, yes.
Sounds like an idea, huh?
All right, baby.
Okay, let me see now. Maybe I'll start in an unusual place. Never the beginning. That would be too much like right. We're actually going to put this one up for you. And
okie dokie.
I have a couple audios up near the top. I'm trying to duck them and dodge them. So here we go. And whenever you're ready.
All right. The Lunatic's Cry by Mr. M. I tend to think, therefore I will be enveloped by the madness that calls to me. I watch shadows bend, they bend to my will, but retain a mind of their own, even still. My dominion takes hold, within my mind, yet restricted by causes ill-defined. People often think, or at least imply, that my desires are merely a lunatic's cry. They can't understand that I love what I do, witnessing wonders as dreams come true. I love to watch the sky echo on for days and see the moon stricken in an umbral gray gaze. I hear the stars whisper as they dart across. They seem to have no worry of pain or loss. I wish I could be free like those rebel stars and be rid of this body and its mortal scars. I would soar across the cosmos in Icarian flight and bathe blissfully in freedom's soothing light. I could watch plants be created and others destroyed and see galaxies engulfed in nameless voids. I would peer deeply into infinite wonder and watch suns explode in a terrible sunder. I am merely a spectator along for the ride, observing cosmic bodies as they shatter and collide. The deeper I go on this galactic endeavor, the more my humanity will fray and sever. But then the thought hits like a meteorite, and reality puts to end the splendorous night. As I return to this, my mortal shell, a guard orders me back to my cell. I was locked up and labeled as insane, for daring to dream greater than simply mundane. Yet one day my theories will be studied in awe. Then they will marvel at the conclusions they draw. In time, my lunacy will be defined as a historic find in a brilliant mind. But for now, I will watch the shadows bend to my will, reluctant as always, but molded still. My sanity has depleted while in this place, due to day after day of violent embrace. I was once rational, but lunacy calls. Rationality is declining within these walls. I am becoming what they have expected, while they steal theories they openly rejected. So I will remain here, betrayed and alone. My dreams are now sealed in walls of stone. All that I could have done for mankind will be lost in this cage where I am confined. No, I will not let my will be broken by acts of men or ill words spoken. I will not let their treachery succeed, though they have sold their soul for greed. They will not be able to tear me down, mocking me on display like some kind of clown. But go on, swine, bask in your wealth, for my dreams reign eternal as space itself. Just know that my vision shall not ever die, but will live among the beauty of the starlit sky. End poem. All right, Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, that was beautifully written, by the way, and beautifully read. I really enjoyed it. What an awful lot in this to look at. There is somebody who's really thought about the cosmos, who really enjoys watching it as well, I think, by the sound of it. But it is a very skillful piece of writing, and I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Kate. Laurent, how about you? But you got to press the button first.
Yeah, off mute.
Did we lose Laurent already?
Maybe. Well, yes,
well, in that
we
case,
did, but
why don't you
back.
Kick us off?
Can you hear me now?
You hear me now?
That's better. I got to ask myself how often this has happened in the past. I was locked up and labeled as insane, but daring to dream greater than simply mundane. Yet one day my theories will be studied in awe, and they will marvel at the conclusions they draw. In time, my lunacy will be defined as an historic find in a brilliant mind. Unfortunately, the science of the day was fledgling, and the church made sure that nothing that casts any doubt on their dogma ever saw the light of day. They did it over and over and over again. This could have been the same thing. Excellent piece.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Jean, how about you?
You know, as always, this is a great piece by Robert. His rhyme is always, you know, pretty stunning all the way through it. You know, just, I don't know, he's just always got it. He's got it. He doesn't compromise. And I like that about his work. But he tells a tale here that's pretty incredible, you know, and he didn't cut corners on it. And I don't know, he made it work. And I think it was a great piece. And I thank him so much for sharing with us. You know, it's excellent. Definitely excellent. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, you did a great read of that, Rex. I really liked this one. I had to put this on my Poems I Think Are Awesome list. You know, I like the fact that it's dark. There is a darkness to it, but it's more like it's not the main theme. The main theme is the idea of this dreamer, this free thinker, this someone whose way of thinking and way of seeing things was ahead of their time, and that people didn't see their genius, didn't accept them as genius, labeled them as a lunatic. And I like that, you know, Lawrence asked the question, you know, I have to wonder how many times has this happened in history? And probably, goodness only knows, I won't even think of a number, but, you know, the whole idea that when you have a thought that does not fit into the social norm, how easily the masses can reject it and then later to be proven right by history. I really like that it's separated in two parts, and with that simple phrase, but for now, separating the two parts. But for now, I will watch the shadows bend to my will, reluctant as always, but molded still. And there was I like the use of the Icarian, like the flight of Icarus, as a metaphor, the idea of someone who's willing to go for the sun while other people, like, and to me, the sun kind of represents the idea of seeking knowledge while other people are willing to stay in the dark. So, just an excellent writing, very well done.
Absolutely. And I agree with Laurent on what his thoughts on the angle of this. It was, you got branded a heretic for going against church doctrine. I mean, Copernicus was vilified for his initiality on the thoughts of the sun being the center of the universe, not the earth. But he died before he actually got into really being chastised and thrown under the bus, so to speak. Galileo wasn't quite that lucky. He got ordered to Rome, and he was given a choice. Hey, you're being branded with heresy. You can please plead guilty for a lighter sentence. And he did that for the lighter sentence. And he was then banished to his home as his prison for the rest of his life. So, and there were more other notable, not just astronomers, but people who medicine, philosophy, they all got the same thing. But then again, somewhere down the line, a lot of their notes, all those things were hidden away in the library underneath the Vatican. And some things are still locked up to this day, which actually should be opened up for the world, for those thoughts, ideas, and notes that the original guys put forth, despite the backhand they were given by the church itself. So, Ms. Grimm, nicely done. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, we're coming up back to you.
Okay. Well, first I want to thank, I want to welcome Thomas to the show. Hey, Thomas, how are you today?
Hey. I'm good.
Hey, Thomas.
Good to have you here.
I had to drive through the pouring rain to get home tonight, but, you know, other than that, it was cool.
Our pouring rain hit here about 3 o'clock, so I get it. It was bad. Coming down in
the was at a pope. It started to pour.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really something. But, yep, it's going to be that way, I guess. See how that is. Good to have you here, and Sam, I guess you caught that. my God. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, in trouble, I guess. Okay, well, I'm going to get back to the seriousness of the task. Pam, I have a piece for you to read next, and there you go. Whenever you're ready.
What did you say?
You.
Oh, okay. All right. I did not hear a name. Sorry. All right. Psych Finding by Passion's Promise. Just in hospital gown, I watched her, dainty fingers holding on to crayons, paper blank, but you can see the railroad of emotions running in her beautiful eyes. A dreamer I am, I watch the curl of her lips as she decides on a color, white paper, black thoughts, scribbling across the page, humming into darkness, her pale face shifted gears. Her look became distorted, sea green eyes, misery stamped. STC shut down the light. She sat there staring at her paper, twisting her head in my direction, numbing my heart, halting my breath. Tears unknown for this creature dripped from my eyes as I scurried like a rat through my own self. Thoughts caught fire and turned to ash on my tongue. The words disintegrated. Pure darkness danced with shadows, nurses, doctors, then her. In my dream, she was normal for the most part. Her beautiful blonde hair kissing the wind, the southern sun bringing out her eyes, and I watched in awe. Then the blinds were pulled down and broken glass resurfaced, and again she's running. I will weave through rivers of darkness. I will swing left and right from drowning just to return to the wake of beauty, to you. Breakfast crew came. She in her spot in the middle of the room and me on my bed wishing to hold her to comfort whatever feared her. For once, the bandage ripped and the wounds left. Bleeding from a brutal spouse have taken flight because I fought that damn darkness watching her, wanting to bring her from her night flight. Dark is coming again. She took her away to the shower and days and nights went on to end of week, finally marking on her page. No words said, just the night sweat, the fears, the moans of pain as I'm choking on mine. I need strength to defeat the demons that are coming. But tonight on her page, I'll return shortly to dance across the moonbeam with you, kiss the lips of a brand new princess. You pulled me through the dips and trials of inner darkness. We'll battle these nights as one. The darkness stars are born. I found the twinkle of my eyes, the depths of despair that we'll repair together. And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Tom, why don't we start with you since you were the last one in the room?
These kind of poems bring up a lot of stuff. I've got a niece who's, depends on who you talk to, but she goes up and down a whole lot. And when she gets really intense, she starts painting and creating a lot of art, and then she destroys everything around her. So you never know. She's getting more stable after these days. I read this, and there's a certain percentage of finding, of saving oneself and saving somebody else, and you see a lot of that. The saddest part is that so much of mental illness is so deeply dealt with by superstition. And even when people know better, this thing of, well, why don't they just? And there is no just. There's too many demons, that too many things that they have no control over. And there's sense of not having any control and moving through like tides. It's captured a lot of what reality for those who, lack of a better word, wired sense, you know, some of the buttons are missing or pedals or whatever you figure you use to control yourself. There's been some things done recently that are actually pretty cool. Got this thing for kids who are autistic as well as for kids who have emotional problems or been through abuse, where you get to play a game that allows you to become more in touch with your emotions and feelings because you learn to be able to be in charge of how you're going to respond to that. And if you're starting to feel like you're losing control, it allows you to practice breathing exercises and you can see yourself bringing yourself well into control. And it's all done, it's kind of like a game or a watch. So it becomes highly effective because it's not about somebody telling you to or making you feel guilty about that you can't, but it plays with feedbacks about your heartbeat and stuff like this. To allow them to treat it all like a game where they can become really in charge and control. And it's been really neat because for autistic kids, it allows them to make themselves more present because they don't feel as easily overwhelmed by the information overload and other things that go on for them. Pretty cool. So, you know, we're making strides. We still don't know half the things would be good to know, but we're getting there.
Well said, Tom. Thank you very much. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, very, very powerful. Very powerful poem. What's the trouble with, if you have a broken arm or a broken leg and a plaster, people will write witty little things on it for you and make you smile. But when something is going on inside and people can't see it and can't respond to it, it's so much more difficult. You can say all the nice things, all the cheerful things, but it doesn't really get to the root of any matter like that, as far as I'm concerned. It takes somebody with a great deal of skill, I think, to help in situations like this might be. But I thought it was beautifully written and very well read, too. Yes, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
I think there's been quite a lot written about patients who share a room under very stressful circumstances, sometimes life and death, certainly sickness, et cetera. And there can be a bonding that goes on. And I see that very strongly in the poem. I'm sure that just about everything I was ever going to say Tom covered, so I won't repeat myself, but it's interesting to see how the emotions, the feelings of the other person really kind of transcend normal feelings for another person, certainly someone who doesn't, who you don't know, but the evidence of your eyes says that they're in deep trouble. And the last stanza, through darkness stars are born, I find the twinkle of my eyes to the depths of despair that we'll repair together. There's help coming, I assume. Pretty formidable work.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think that Passions did a great job with this piece. I think it was nicely penned, and I think the tale was very well told. And it was well expressed. You know, her use of language was good throughout, and it was, it kind of made it, I don't want to use the word palatable, but almost palatable. You know, the tale was told, and there was no worse. We were no worse for the wear. It was good. Good job. And this was for your contest, wasn't it, Rex? I saw it for,
the White Room.
Yeah. So, When I saw that, I went, "What?" I said, "Well, yeah, that kind of works really well there." you know, they check on their problem. So we're.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, it's definitely a powerful rite. I like that Weaver brought up about how it's not the same, not as easy to heal a broken mind. Oh, the first thing I noticed is there's a kind of like childlikeness, a childness to the person, the subject of the poem, making me think of either an adult who has dementia or Alzheimer's, or you know, a psychological disorder of some kind, or even a child, like an autistic child. I like how she interweaves between what's going on with the person she's observing and what's going on with herself. Like, and I like that the main theme of the poem is about two people who are healing together. And, you know, for the idea of and the strength and the courage it takes to be there for somebody while at the same time going through your own turmoil. I really like, I will wade through rivers of darkness. I will swing left and right from drowning just to return to the wake of beauty to you. You know, the idea of, you know, just always being there for somebody. It's just a beautiful, powerful rite all the way through and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. I think the touch in this is the fact that despite that which happened to the initiality of why she's there in the first place, there is something that actually gravitates to a stronger feeling, that of caring. Seeing beyond her own travails to look inside someone a lot smaller, a lot daintier, and maybe a lot more in need of attention than she. So the thought of looking past one's own pain in the moment to see that which is on the bed next to her, a young girl, it's on the note of something that's shared in the moment, even though words aren't spoken. There's that note of looking forward to seeing her again, because she offers up a touch of light in the darkness that spills across. So, nicely done, Passions. Thank you. Okay. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okie doke. Laurent, I have the next one up for you, please. This is The Strength of Will and Mind by Dan DeShino.
All right. By the strength of will and mind. Evil is opportunistic, deceptive, predatory, and unbiased. It does not seek righteous fulfillment or love. It only craves weakness. And by the hands of the indifference that is my surroundings today, I am weakness. I am the raven, the black phoenix of survival, who roams through history and legend. All that roam face the fate of peril with every step. And so, battered from a storm, indifferent to my immortality, starving and hovering over strange and eerie lands, I find myself circling above an unwelcoming, scorched earth. Sometimes hell is your only chance for redemption. So I land once darkness cools to rest, just a shadow of the ominous shadow I am. And in the darkness, among the harsh stabbing ground, I find a soft silk, so enticing in my darkest hour. And I succumb to the weakness I have become, and chance to drop armor that is rest. My friends, do not forget hell has demons who attack with soft, open hands to those in need, and from the soft silken bedness. Opposite shade of my own, awaiting weakness, preying on innocence, grotesque and mindless, with one purpose, consume. One instant can be forgotten, as is a wisp of cloud in the darkest of nights, or define your whole existence. And so, in the quickest of moments, evil struck and missed. Only a feather pierced. Many times does fate decide I should live another day. My only task is to preserve it. In the darkness, I see glimmering eyes, and we stare, and I am ready, not with claw or beak, but with mind, I wait. The smallest movement, and I am airborne, and with the weapon of will, I strike. Claws land on eyes, and crush, and pierce, as thunder may crush the spirit, and lightning pierce the body. The demon is destroyed by quick, poetic actions as a defining moment in which stories are made. Now, I did not know this creature, and to its demise, it did not know me. And though hideous and foul, nourishment found in its remains is survival. No more demons dared to attack me that night. And when the morning thermals did rise, so did I. Broken wing, taking flight, to soar onward into the forests to heal and bring to all those below by mere sight once more the legend I am.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I like seeing the different rights and the alphas. Ground contest. Daniel chose the Raven, and I think that was a great choice. And this one is his third poem he's written as the Raven. And I have to say it is probably my absolute favorite out of the three. He really delves into the psychology of the fight. He really goes into the darkness. So I like the first-person narrative, the confidence in this. I am the Raven, the black phoenix of survival, who roams through history as legend. And that's a really good point. There's a lot of legends out there in cultures, you know, that mythology about the Raven. I like his sense of movement, like the quick movements of the Raven. And a lot of times, Ravens are kind of pictured as being like, I don't know if it's kind of clownish or awkwardness. I don't know what it is, but you see him on the side of the road just, you know, hopping around. But here we have, he has really truly brought out the hunter, the tracker, the killer of instinct of this creature. I really like the smallest movement, and I am airborne, and with the weapon of will, I strike, claws land on eyes and crush and pierce as thunder may crush the spirit and lightning pierce the body. Wonderful lines there, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Tom, how about you?
And it's definitely a Daniel, but I really like the way he has taken the image of a bird. And there's a great deal of myth and history surrounding the Raven, far more in England perhaps than in America beyond Poe's, you know, poem about the Raven. But I love this. I'm the Raven, the black phoenix of survival who roams through this as legend. That sets it all up. And the way in which he speaks of his own human weakness, but in the guise of the Raven, and lets the personification of the bird speak so beautifully about the ways in which we deal with it. We feel beaten down by sin and things that are evil, that we're constantly in this interior war, as well as often an exterior fight for survival. It's very deft in the way it handles all of this. I was quite impressed.
Thank you very much, Tom. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes, this is such a good piece of work. I could feel the poor Raven, tired, knows he has to rest to get through what he has to go, and so tries to rest. and thinks, okay, I can do this. This is okay. Nothing's going to bother me at the moment. And then he sees the glimmering eyes from the darkness staring at him. And he knows he has to be ready to go. And he does. Smallest movement and he's off. And he did. He managed to strike and crush and pierce. I love that. As thunder may crush the spirit and lightning pierce the body. Yes, I think it's a beautifully written piece of work. It's really good. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think this is an excellent piece here by Dan. You know, just awesome work. Wonderful story told. His imagery was so good, and there were so many great stanzas all the way through. But Kate, aren't you the funnel web spider?
No, actually, I'm not this funnel web spider, but I am a funnel web. There are
I
two
got
of
nervous.
Us.
I was like, doggone.
No.
I didn't know they were killing you. That's cool. That's cool. I got nervous. I'm like, doggone, you know?
Oh,
I was
thank you.
No. But it really was a great piece by Dan. Just really just well put together. And I think it's a great entry for the Pathlo Mega Contest. I wish we could get a few more of those, you know, on the board. Yeah, it's nice to get to like keep with them throughout the contest. So yeah, great job.
Someday I'll read my Komodo dragon rice on a Friday.
I like it. That works.
There you go.
Okay.
Great comments, everybody. And this does walk that nice touch of a legend about the raven itself. And he also hints at what a group of ravens are called, but without actually going into it, an unkindness or a conspiracy, because the language he's used and the depths which he got into. But also as a metaphorical piece, this walks on on the thought of that which we used to be, a little more careful, a little more wary, back in the days when things came hunting for us. Things still hunt us, yet we're a little bit more compliant, a little bit more fat and weak in our representation these days. So we kind of fall into this notion of, hey, we're not what we once were. We're kind of giving way to things that maybe we shouldn't be. All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
Uh-oh. I guess I better be ready. Okay, here we go. Can I get you to read the next one for us?
Was that me you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, certainly, no problem at all.
Okay, this is Four Horsemen by Kitties and Naughty Poets. Very fun.
Okay, thank you, just got it. Here we go, babe. You entwine my thoughts, tantalize and tease with words. As your conquest for my body takes root within a single pat of the hooves, grazing on passion's grass, sweet with a devilish twist. My impulsive mind wars across untouched flesh, padding quietly in waiting, in want, famished in the grooves of hell, craving affection from your torment, from your words of torture. But alas, this fantasy is destined to wither, and death shakes my universe as the four horsemen of the apocalypse ride conquest, war, famine, and death. Poem.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. Pam?
Yeah, great read there, first of all, Kate. I really enjoy a poem that gives you a good, like, sudden, like, sharp turn at the end. You know, this is so filled with passion, so filled with that idea of a beautiful, passionate moment shared between two lovers, and then she hits you with, and of course, you know, I know the picture is a clue that there's something dark going on, but it's still really nice the way it's set up with the, but alas, this fantasy is destined to wither and death shakes my universe as the four horsemen of the apocalypse ride conquest, war, famine and death. It's like the within that end part, there's that whole idea of everything that was beautiful, everything that connected us to having a beautiful and healthy and loving life suddenly was trampled. And, you know, just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, ma'am. And Thomas, how about you?
I like how she starts this off in a sense about feeling captured, almost played with by someone else. You know, you entwine my thoughts, tantalize and tease with words as your conquest for my body takes root in a single part of the hooves. You know, as if she's being written over, amused. There's a sense of, you know, a singularity in here. And then she makes it seem as if perhaps it's no more than something she imagined, because but alas, this fantasy is destined to wither, and death shakes my universe. Where reality destroys things that we might love, or hope that were really true, but are never really sure. And so, in a sense, to me, she's crying out how, you know, the way the world works destroys everything of value that she holds to be true. It's very striking. I mean, I was playing with some of the different perspectives you might see in this, and it has a very strong dark side, but it's really a poem of intense passion more than anything else.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. Jean, how about you?
Well, I thought this piece was kind of intriguing. You know, I was listening to Pam, and I'm kind of rereading it, and I'm going, You know, it goes through, you know, as your conquest for my body takes root within a single part of the hooves, okay? And then we go down to my impulsive mind wars across untouched flesh, padding quietly and waiting in want. You know, famished in the groves of hell. You know, so I go, okay, conquest, war, famine, followed by death. A little death. I found it intriguing, and I like the duality I saw in it. So, excellent job, Kitty. High five.
Thank you very much, Jean. Mm-hmm. All right, Laurent, how about you?
You said you dropped. Oh, he's back.
Yep. Need a little Velcro on that chair, Laurent.
Here's at her. Get off mute.
Well, I took him back.
Kate, you got to read it. How about you?
Yes. It was a wonderful piece of poetry.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Do you want to go back to Laurent, or will I carry on?
Yeah, go ahead and finish that, Kay.
Okay, not that I have that much to say. I just thought it was beautifully written. You can feel the passion. You can feel the fear. And an impulsive mind wars across untouched flesh, padding quietly and waiting in want. So, yes, there's an awful lot of love going through this poem. And then you get to the end and the four horsemen. That came as a surprise to me, and I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, conquest, war, famine, and death, not the best thing. But, yes, beautifully written, and I liked it a great deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Okay, Laurent, what you got?
Yeah, I apologize. My phone and I are fighting. I put myself on mute, as is normal, and then I lost the call screen and couldn't bring it back. So I had to get out and come back in again. There's a strong erotic undercurrent to this, really rather well done. But as Jean mentioned, it moves right into death. Is it the little death? I'm not sure. It might be, but alas, this fantasy is designed to wither. So it is very much a fantasy. It's nothing that happens. The world rears its ugly head. The four harvest horsemen of the apocalypse. shake her universe. So perhaps this fantasy will never be, even though she wanted it that way. It's a little bit different at the end there. Kind of struggled with the meaning. But excellent, I should add.
Excellent. Thank you very much, everybody. I'm going to take a little different path. Because of the language and the thought that rolls in with, I'm going with somebody stricken with cancer, and they understand the four seasons on the back end of this conquest, war, famine, and death. The conquest is the understanding that the cancer is taking root and taking hold. War is you and the disease fighting each other. Famine, that's that angle near the back end of things where your body is kind of on the emaciated side. Death is that inevitable conclusion. So I'm going to take it that way just for the beauty and the peace itself. Thank you very much, Kitty. All right, Jean.
Okie dokie. Thomas, if you wouldn't mind, I have the next one for you.
Oh, you can talk me into it.
Nurture by Jack Tomkovic.
Nature, nurture. Gardener of my inner self, you dig deep and water roots by hand. Adding extra nitrogen and phosphorus, you spit in my soil like Jesus with the blind, deaf man. Spread the moist clay upon my face. I see raindrops, hear spiders spinning, flowers beckon, azalea pink or cynthia yellow. I hear birds singing, cardinals and nuthatches, low wheat, walu. Hear the wind rustling the leaves, refreshed, I ask, is that magnolia upon my lips? And poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. And Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
When I saw the title, I thought, oh, yes, that's one of my pet interests is nature versus nurture. And then, of course, it carries on and it's nothing to do with that. It's just someone who's I've got to think this is a metaphor for someone who is trying to make things around them so much better by being the gardener, by looking after whoever it is he's looking after, and seeing things becoming better as flowers grow and birds sing. But that's kind of what I took out of it. I thought it was beautiful. Thank you.
That's a great comment there. Okay, thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. You can tell by his use of language, certain phrases like adding extra nitrogen and phosphorus, that you know that Jack does enjoy gardening. I like the attention to details, like the I see raindrops, hear spiders spinning, flowers beckon, azalea pink. To me, there's a real wonderful spirituality in this. Gardener of my inner self, you dig deep and water roots by hand. You know, to me, there's this sense of someone or something, a higher power perhaps, that, you know, that you acknowledge as the gardener of your soul, of your spirit, that makes you strong, that makes you beautiful. But at the same time, that you are a gardener yourself, tending to the people and you know, things around you, whether it's an actual garden or just, you know, taking care of your family or taking care of people, you know, in order to make life beautiful. I really enjoyed this all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Jack often writes about his wife, and she is the gardener of his inner self. And he uses the analogy of the garden without to describe what she does for him within. Beautifully done.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I really like this piece. I think it's a great use of metaphor in there. And it was short, you know, comparative to a lot of pieces that we get here on Fridays. But it really says a lot, and I think that it was well done. Job, Jack. I appreciate it very much.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Jack, you got to – I'm Jack. Tom, you got to read this. What about you?
Well, I reviewed this and said, this is a lovely use of metaphor. The idea of an inner Eden seated and ready that only awaits us to be spiritually present. The lovely thought. No, stunning idea. This gifts the reader as if the writer was waiting to open it to the heart of each person he touches. I just really loved it. Beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. I think Kate hit the right note with this starting off, and Laurent, you filled in the back end with the about his wife, and I think the end of this is that magnolia upon my lips kind of hits that first morning kiss, so to speak, the life returning anew. Nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
You know, it's always that to me. What is that? Just play.
Well, you know, we're going to do the dog pile on the rabbit.
Oh, God. Well, it's not Wednesday. That's a plus. anyhow, I'm going to put this piece up by Arcana Moore, and I have a fan club for that. Well, an audio fan club, whichever way you want to go. And here we go. So.
Venues of alleged disturbance invite visitation, including the Dolphin Hotel, an innocuously named place, wherein a room exists with relentless reputation, boasting 56 deaths of those who ventured its walls. Renowned for malignant, murderous madness, leading a perverse and persuasive, panicked past. Talk of suicides, disappearances, and dubious deaths. Various victims of scolds for my shiver scale. 1408 beckons my award from parodies of misgivings, spoken with contempt from disbelieving doubts. Deep down, we all know that ghosts aren't real. Inventions to chill and thrill insipid imaginations. I make a lucrative living mocking their assertions and eagerly exercising envisaged expectations, all told with conviction to tempt some trade with tales of terror and fantastic fantasies. The room seems quite ordinary, with nothing apparent. No somber spectres walking through waning walls, nor wailing whines from faded, forlorn phantoms. Just sparse decor from a bygone, vanished era. Staring the stillness with peripheral peaks, searching the shadows to engage my intrigue. I watch time traverse backwards in ticking taunts, as I feel a foreboding uneasiness descend. My eyes begin drowning disbelief with suspicion. As the room reaches into my strangling skepticism, with violent visceral visions of morbid madness, teasing my thoughts with a theater of fear. I'm drowned in despair from deluded dreams that mentality manifests midst morbid mindscapes, portraying pain and sufferance from seeping souls who made the mistake of dispassionate dismissals. I'm trapped in oppressive, constricting psychosis that coils my reason with shades of distress. There is no escape from these evil echoes, compelling me to morph into haunting horror. To become one with the room and all its prey. The only way it ends is by embracing death. As I watch past replays of possessive paranoia that mime their warnings in besieged charades, I must put a stop to this insidious insanity, even if it means ending my lamented life. With fire, I tried destroying this rancid room to purge this poisonous prison from hell. But I failed, you see. So hear my plea. For I am now weak and will never be free.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you very much for the sound cloud. It is very much appreciated. Laurent, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Well, from dismissive skeptic to victim, prisoner of the room seeking death as the only escape. To become one with the room and all its prey, the only way it ends is by embracing death. As I watch past replays of possessive paranoia that mime their warnings in besieged charades. This is a brilliantly chilling tale that uses the myth of the evil and haunted room that exists in our lexicon of the supernatural.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
I just got back, so can you call on me last or something like that?
All right. Jean, what you got?
Well, you know, I think that this is a wonderful performance piece. Don't get upset, Frank. Definitely, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, we always have Frank with one of his pieces, and that always comes out as a performance piece. And then we've had Gonzo with his stories, which are so well done, and now we have this. It's intriguing because they really, all three of them tend to set the mood in the from beginning to end. Pretty incredible. I mean, it's great work. I love the alliteration in this piece that kind of runs through from beginning to end. And there's a whole lot of it. I'd have definitely stumbled over it about 15 times. Always makes me thankful for the sound club, you know. But definitely a great piece and a good tribute piece to Stephen King. You know, it's done in that fashion, and I think it was just pretty clever.
Thank you, Jean. Kate, how about you?
Oh, this was incredible. It carried me along. He built it and built it and built it and took you along with him. And I think, oh, the alliteration. Oh, my goodness. It's so well read. Yes, I thought it was incredibly good. In fact, I'm going to read it again later. It's so good. Yes, thank you. It was a wonderful piece of work.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. Thomas, how about you?
There is someone who challenges one of our other poets in terms of the use of consonants and assonants. Feeding a perverse and pervasive panic attack. This is death. I mean, it just, you know, he writes it so the words slither and slide, even as they they're maintaining their own mysterious little beat by using the right temptives and letting them repeat and build on each other. Just a wonderful use of what sound can create before you even get into what the words can say. A great sense of how people become almost mesmerized by a beat and a rhythm of words. Carries himself from being a very almost unbeliever to becoming someone who becomes captured and held within the spirit of hell, the room itself. So there is no escape. Just delightfully done. I admit to my horror fan and dark and stuff. I can mostly just take it or leave it. But this one just done with a great sense of what the power of words are. And that just makes it a delicious read.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. Pam?
Yeah. Well, I have to agree with everyone that, you know, wonderful rhyme, wonderful alliteration. He's got such a great command of an elegant style of language. I like that with this one, it's a poem that you can appreciate if you know the Stephen King book or, you know, story that it's based after. And you can appreciate the attention to detail. And if you haven't seen it, then it compels you. And, you know, I really felt like he focused in on really well on how it all becomes about the psychological horror, you know, because there's the rumors of disappearance, because you hear over and over again, you know, that this room is haunted, horrible things happen. And then he pulls into question the idea of what is actually happening and what is all the, what is the playing, simply the mind playing tricks. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comments, everybody. This is aside from the great alliteration, this is a perfect 3-minute version of that movie, scaled down in language and thoughts that one can put forth, as well as the book itself. And what Arcana used for the language itself kind of rings on those notes of Poe, just the thoughts and the delving into that psychological angle of terror, fear, and that which one can immerse themselves into. Nicely done, Arcana. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
I knew you were coming back here. I did. Okay, the next piece I have is by Naomi Serra, and it's called Fly Fishing, and I have an audio for that as well. So here we go.
Fly fishing. Fueled by passion, I wade into the shimmer of sun, dancing on blue water. Stand still, breathe in the tranquil breeze. Draw back, cast out at just the right angle and speed. An art in motion. A quick and subtle delivery must not scare the fish. A temptress with a nymph fly, just licking the soft ripples and small bunny leeches. I let my line drift a while before I strip it back. The cold current softly laps my skin, and a tingling chill crawls up my spine. My mind settles, quietened from all work and worries, as once more I smile, pull back my line, throw again, and just wait to see what happens.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It very much appreciated. Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Whoa, I am certainly going to take up fishing. What? I didn't realize for a second it could be that stimulating. Oh, beautifully written. I loved it. I mean, her voice and her read made it all the more interesting, obviously. But blimey, Gordon Bennett, really beautifully, beautifully written, and it was so sensuous. Okay, well, I'll be fishing later on tonight. Thank you.
Oh, what kind of bait you going to be running with?
Mosquitoes.
Oh, my God.
Nice and sad. Jean, how about you?
I don't know, but thank God I was on mute. Because I'll tell you what, Kate Hughes is busting me up good. Because I was thinking to myself, boy, she put a whole new face on fly fishing, really. It's like, wow, go ahead and nail me. Yeah, I mean, that's it was well done. And I thought it was just a really interesting spin on the whole thing, and it was great. So, excellent work, Naomi, and thanks for sharing that one with us. That's common.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. And Tom, how about you?
He said he had to go steep some tea.
Okay, then that would make it yours.
All right. Yeah, I thought this was absolutely beautiful. I'm fascinated by the shoes that the woman's wearing in the pictures. I've never seen shoes like that except for like platforms. But I liked how there was that wonderful, delicate sensuality, like that kind of like almost that underlying meaning. And yet at the same time, it does really capture the tranquility of doing something you enjoy, like fishing. My mom actually found a kitten one time when she was trout fishing. So she had for years this cat named Trout. I really like a temptress with a nymph fly just licking the soft ripples and small bunny leeches. I let my line drift a while before I strip it back. You know, it kind of has almost that whole like striptease type feel, that tease, give them a little of what they want and then take it away. And I like how she ends with, or not ends, the second to last stanza, my mind settles, quieted from all work and worries. And to me, that works really well for the poem itself, but also for the idea that if anything you do that takes you away from the daily stresses of life. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I'm going to assume that the picture is of Naomi because she describes the process of fly fishing in a way that convinces me that she's been there and she's done that. The understanding of the passion, not sensual, but of being one with the river, trying to attract the fish, is just perfectly delivered. She speaks in a voice that lets me understand she knows exactly what's going on. You speak to anybody who's a serious fly fisherman, and they will describe the tranquility and the passion and the anticipation of throwing the line over and over again, artistically positioning it exactly where you want to, taking everything out of your mind, as she says, my mind settles, quietened from all work and worries. Great piece.
I couldn't agree with you more, Laurent. I was running along those same lines because this is all about that moment, being, as you said, one with the river and the surroundings. And it is about letting everything else that bothers you in the moment just drift away as you settle into that which comes naturally, trying to catch something. And also just enjoying the surroundings itself for the beauty that nature holds in that moment just for you. Because most fly fishermen, they like to find their own spot where nobody else is around, just to enjoy everything all in that moment for themselves. Nicely done, Naomi. Thank you. All right, Jane.
Well, I just want to say that I don't think Naomi uses bait. I think she just gives them that come hither tone, they just come over and bite the line. That's what I think. This is my opinion. I could be wrong.
I agree.
That was great. Let me go on. Rex, I have the next one for you, and this is by S. Sharp, The Roaring Twenties.
Okay. The Roaring Twenties by S. Sharp. She sat cross-legged on the table, the chair gone, like her inhibitions. She waited for me to push her back in time, roaring twenties, jazzed and swing. The smooth, velvety feel in her eyes matched the feel of her love and caress. Music swaying her hips, pushing limits up and down, rhythm and beat, the fire blushing, crackling with excitement. In and out, her eyes took me deep within her and left me there to explore a decade of love, jazz, and swing, and funk. And Tom, are you back? Oh, okay. Well, we'll start with you.
Okay. This is the one. I mean, in terms of the phrasing and the way it has a really nice jazz feel with a little bebop. And yet at the same time, you know, it catches some of the more classic ballad type jazz things that led to Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, and it's in there, and you can, music swaying your hips, pushing the limits up and down, rhythm and beat, the fire blushing. It's sensual, sexy, and at the same time, open, swinging, and full of, you know, and full of things that want to make you dance, as well as climbing to bed with somebody. I found this just a great reflection both of the period as well as being, you know, a nice sensual piece. Very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. And Jean, how about you?
Oh, you know, I think that this is just fabulous. I think that it really suited the contest, and I think it was well written, and I think it was just, you know, it was one of the best pieces too. We had a lot of really great pieces in that contest. It's kind of tough to pick and choose, but this one is still holds its own. It's not real long, but it definitely hits all the right notes. So, excellent job.
Thank you, Jean.
Little pun.
Kate, how about you?
Yes, I like that little pun. It was really good. Yes, this is. Beautiful. This is so, the Roaring Twenties, I mean, the whole thing of the Roaring Twenties, fabulous jazz and swing, the smooth velvety feel in her eyes matched the feel of her love and caress. Beautifully written. It brings you into the music, it brings you into the people. You can feel what they're feeling. And music can do that so easily. I think music is... You either love or hate something, and it's to do with your own brain's pattern and waves and how music affects you. And you can see this is affecting them. Fire blushing, crackling with excitement. Yes, I think it's really beautifully written. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a great little piece. Kind of deceptive. The poet uses jazz and swing as the metaphor for the physicality of the act of love all the way through here. Love is at least jazz and swing, wonderful rhythms of the bodies, one with the other, the rhythm and the beat, which causes the fire to blush, crackling with excitement in and out. It's deliciously done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ron. Pam, how about you?
I really liked this one. You know, to me, well, first of all, I like how it's very, there's something very non-traditional about the way he presents someone who decides to just push away all the chairs and sit cross-legged on top of the table. It's like the representation of the act of a free spirit. I like that, you know, to me, the idea is two people who are getting to know each other and getting to connect to each other by listening to music together. I like that they're not actually in the 1920s, but rather bringing each other back into that roaring 20s, that jazz, that swing. And I do like that line, she waited for me to push her back in time. You know, and there is a wonderful sensuality to it. And I really like her eyes took me deep within her and left me there to explore a decade of love, jazz, and swing. It's like to me that I really like what you had to say, Lauren, and I have to agree with you. But I also like how it just to me speaks on the idea that you get to know somebody's best when you get to know what music they love. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, everybody. Thank you very much. That opening short stanza gives quite the thought to the picture itself, which was really sweet. And the line that went with it, she gave me a smile like a feel in my hip pocket. And it kind of plays with that notion with this. And it does walk a very nicely sensual and even almost erotic a touch of a thought with the language used and a little play with the music and the feel itself. So, well done, Scott. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay, and I got to say, yeah, what everybody else said, Scott, that's it, all of it, wrapped up into one. So, excellent job. And here we go. Pam, the next one is on you, ma'am. If you wouldn't mind reading this, it's called Moxie Notes Across the Room by Pam Ray.
Oh, I heard of her. She's a troublemaker. All right, I'll go ahead and read it. All right. Moxie notes across the room. Hot damn, I love this speckle of curvaceous smoke and brass notes of moxie that makes me wish for a deep swallow of midnight sin. The hooch begged to be tasted and the dance floor wanted hips that swayed with a downhill roll into the fast lane of burning rubber. Sweet sassafras from across the room, that doozy of a man caught my attention. He was a full charge of Tesla striptease, all his energy focused on me. Before you could say, and all that jazz, we were on the dance floor, the mystical vibration of strings pressing our bodies together. We were meshing on the fringe. He crooned in my ear, "You seem like the type of dame who has never heard music on the underside of a bridge. Things aren't always what they seem," I whispered back. "Indeed," he replied. "But one thing I know for sure, you have the eyes of a dreamer." "I'm an author," I told him. "I'm always riding the Morpheus starlight to a universe of unbridled possibility." His eyes held mine prisoner. His strong hands possessed my curves and my senses. "Why are you here, doll?" "I came here to find the next chapter in my book, Mayhem, Sex, and Mystery. That's what the readers want." "And which of those three do you want from me?" "All of the above," I said in a long, slow exhale. He had a spitfire grin and a deep, sexy laugh. I smiled at him knowing the neon moonlight serenaded us both. I pulled him closer, releasing a moan to rival well-tuned sax. This eggs and coffee hepcat was nib-cocked and ready to play the aces. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
Pam, this is wonderful. Wonderful. It was a great take on the prompt. You know, she was the music heard faintly on the edge of sound. You know, I did like that quote very much. And I think you really rocked it. You know, I loved the tale throughout. You know, and you get down here, you know, he was a full charge of Tesla striptease and the energy focused on me, all his energy focused on me. That was a great three lines there. And then you get down a little further and things aren't always what they seem. I whispered back, "Indeed," he replied, "but one thing I know for sure, you have the eyes of a dreamer." You know, it just rolls, and I think you did an excellent job, you know, penning it, and yeah, I think it was great. Just a great take on the prompt, a great take on the noir theme, and yeah, I really enjoyed it very much. Excellent.
Thank you very much. I did notice while I was reading that spell check accidentally changed always to already, so I did make sure to fix that.
I'm sure you'll get it. You're welcome, honey.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Oh, bravo, Pam. Once again, you present us with a poem. It is sophisticated, fun, sensual, erotic in places. You seem to have your tongue firmly in your cheek at certain places. I'm an author, I told him. I'm always riding the Morpheus starlight to a universe of unbridled possibility. Now, that's deliciously phrased, but quoted that way, I think, for a reason. And when he says, why are you here, doll? You say, I came here to find the next chapter in my book, Mayhem, Sex, and Mystery. That's what the readers want. And to say that you want all of the above, which of those three do you want from me? You absolutely have got to decipher for me the left stanza, because I know what a Hepcat is, not sure about eggs and coffee, don't know what Nipcock is, but I do know what Ready to Pick the Aces is. So how about deciphering for me?
Sure, absolutely. Can I take time to decipher, Rex?
Sure.
All right. Eggs and coffee. It used to be that people would put an egg in their coffee ground because it was believed to make the coffee smoother. So eggs and coffee was a phrase used to describe as a person as smooth. Nibcocked, I just, changed the Nibcock to Nibcocked. Nibcock was a 1930s slang term for an erection. Play the Aces is just the Aces has been something that was great, but also, the idea of, taking the gamble. So, and that explains that last stanza.
Thank you.
Well said, Laurent. Thank you. Kate, how about you?
Oh, I loved it. It was just my kind of thing. I think it's just wonderful. I love this, the hooch begged to be tasted, and the dance floor wanted hips that swayed with a downhill roll into the fast lane of burning rubber. Just beautiful. I'm just going all the way through it. I was going, oh, this is so good. And then you get to that last stanza. It got me as well, I have to admit. I thought, eggs and coffee. I thought, oh, he wants to be there in the morning for breakfast. Possibly. But obviously I was wrong. And I thought Nibcock had something to do with the fountain pen. And obviously I was wrong there as well. But yes, it was really, really beautifully done. Thank you so much.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
And Tom, how about you?
Oh, I thought this was delicious. That's how we all say it. The very good use of vernacular. Painting of the images of both players is really nice. Quick brush strokes. Just enough to let you get what it is, but not room to fill it in with your own imagination. And just enough sexiness and just enough sensuality to fit the music and the time. I was really impressed. Very, very well done.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, I was going to start with that last stanza, but since you already explained it, I already knew. I'm going to say that last stanza actually makes up for the second last stanza, which kind of hits on the note of, I pull them close to releasing a moan to rival a well-tuned sax. Yes, you got Nibcock. And that's why you're growing like a well-tuned sax. I did like the Spitfire grin angle. That was a nice, there's that sort of a 50 caliber machine gun spitting out of that airplane, hitting on around 260 miles an hour. And there was one more. What was it? I've lost it. No. Oh, yeah. He was a full charge of Tesla striptease. All his energy focused on me. Kind of gives that thought to a Tesla sitting in the middle of his Tesla coil, and you see all this sparking electricity abounding everywhere, and that's the focus in the moment. And that was him. So That was a nice play in there, too.
Thank you. I actually honestly thought as I was writing that you might like that part. And yeah, you definitely got the imagery I was going for. And I thought you'd also appreciate the different slang phrases and terms that I dug up from the 1930s. But thank you very much, Rex, and thank you for the inspiration.
Yeah, them zoot suits had plenty of room to grow.
Yeah.
All right, Jane. We're coming back and say you.
Okie doke. Kate, I have one for you to read. It's called An Uncontrolled Future by Poetic Creations.
Okay, I muted myself. Just one second, if you could, I'll open this up. Okay, An Uncontrolled Future. Every memory has been repressed, suppressed by the subconscious. Memories do not exist on the conscious level, and they never have. They come in uncontrolled waves of intrusive thoughts, flashbacks, and premonitions. I am still 12, or am I 38? Is this life an illusion, a sight of another possibility, or possibilities of things yet to come? Am I still in control, or am I being controlled? Can I change the future, or has this nightmare solidified to become my fate? Did I grapple with the future only to become stuck reliving the past, or has my mind become unstuck in the fabric of space and time? End poem.
Nice job.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to kick us off.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Kate. You know, I really just, wow, this is a very thought-provoking one. I like how he delves like right away into the idea of the suppressed subconscious. You know, to me, this really touches on the idea of what the mind can become like when you go through a tragic event. They say that if you go through some sort of tragedy like abuse or some sort of like, you know, attack or violence or something that really – whatever age it happened at, that's oftentimes the age that you become stuck at emotionally. I like that he puts in the question, is this life an illusion, a sight of another possibility or possibilities of things yet to come and still in control, or am I being controlled? You know, the whole idea of, you know, that idea of free will, or, you know, am I a complete puppet to the whims of the gods or the fates? You know, just an intriguing write all the way through and absolutely very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
I have to agree. I think the piece is very well done. And I'm with you, Pam. That was the stance I was going to grab, so it's just funny when you grabbed it. I was like, yeah, that's the one. I thought that kind of said a lot. And I thought it was just well done, you know, all the way through. It wasn't a very long piece, but it definitely, you know, said a lot. It was very thought-provoking, yes, and intriguing. So nice job, PC, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely.
Thank you, Gene. And Tom, how about you?
Well, it starts off with memories and how it almost seem to control you more than you recall. The idea is they come in uncontrolled ways or intrusive thoughts, flashbacks, and premonitions. You know, they both conscious of the life you have lived, but also make it difficult sometimes to see the life you are living. And he captures that very well. Is this life an illusion, a sight of another possibility, possibilities of things yet to come? Am I still in control? That whole business, you know, because if we don't acknowledge the past and recognize it, then we tend to relive it. But if we become too caught up in it, then do we have anything else? You know, how do we deal with the future if we accept the idea that the future may be full of unknowns? that we have to make them. There's some great questions in here, some great arguments about how much we live our lives and how much our lives are lived. Very well done.
Thank you, Tom. And Laurent, how about you?
Really a fascinating piece. The mind is so full of salties, glaring black holes that swallow our past and worry us about the future. I've seen hypnosis and people be able to recreate the morning of a third grade classroom, which otherwise they might never. And I've also seen them react with a suggestion that, you know, they're now 80. What do you feel like? What do you see around you? And the mind and its release of memories, sometimes like leaks from an overly full barrel, can really hit you sideways if you're not ready for them. And then plays with that notion that you can't really sometimes trust what you remember or what you anticipate. Yeah, lovely, lovely book.
Oh, well, further on, thank you. And Kate, how about you? You got to read this.
Oh, this spoke to me so much. I have huge gaps in my memory of my younger years. People remember their first teacher. They remember their first classroom. I have none of those memories, and I have no idea why. And also, of course, being an insomniac, I'm mostly insane anyway, so this really spoke to me so much. Uncontrolled waves of intrusive thoughts, flashbacks and premonitions. Am I still 12 or am I 38? I have to apologize to PC for stumbling at the end of that. I do apologize. Sometimes I don't see the words clearly enough. But yes, it's so much in this to think about and so much to understand. The mind is a fascinating valley that I'd love to skydive into at some point or other. But yes, it was beautiful. I really enjoyed it.
Great comments, everybody. I'm going to go with a moment of pure lucidity coming out of the fog of Alzheimer's and wondering what is going on, because you've got all of this old memory, nothing sitting on the new angle, the question of, hey, am I 12 or am I 38? And the idea of questioning how long do I have in the moment of clear-headed thought before I devolve once more on stuff in the fabric of time, so to speak. Thank you, PC. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, I am going to put Thomas's piece up next, followed by Laurent. So, here we go. We're going to start with Thomas, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Let me hit the right button here so I can see where it is. Okay. Post-mortem of a suicide. No one will know when I die. They have stopped listening long ago. In the end, history and regrets, clarity that the light was a mirage, potential will never pay the bills, and no matter how much they love you, you only hear about the last part. Never be surprised by how self-serving human beings are, encapsulated. At one point or another, we are all aggressive drivers. Get out of my way, you! There will be no suicide note. God is told my last misadventure. Karma is a future investment, and I'm not sure. And I am sure I don't have one. If you are obvious, people want sublime. If you are subtle, they demand clarity. Just as you choose to walk your own path doesn't guarantee anyone will follow it or even notice your mistake, unless you owe them something. Depression is not the killer. Recovery is. End point.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we kick it off with you, please?
Certainly. No one will know when I die. They will have stopped listening long ago. It's kind of a frightening thought. Think about it. You reach a point in your life when there will be no suicide note. God is not controlling the past adventure. You know what? When you are yourself, it's never enough. If you are obvious, people want sublime. If you're subtle, they demand clarity. Just because you choose to walk your own path, you become a little different. You become off-center from where they are. They choose perhaps not to understand. They're not going to follow the path for comprehension. As you say, it doesn't guarantee anyone will follow it or even notice you're missing unless you owe them something. And how human is that? If you owe them something, they will remember you, usually for the wrong reasons. Fantastic work, my friend. Fantastic.
Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
Okay, I'm back. Sorry. Can you hear me? Okay. Oops. Okay. Yes. Such depth to this. And so many things that you heard them and you thought, I know exactly what that means. I know exactly what that feels like. You have no one to listen to you. I'm not surprised by people thinking only of themselves because that's how we tend to be as humans. It's what affects you first, and then it broadens out to what might affect other people. But God is not controlling my last misadventure. Karma is a future investment, and I'm sure I don't have one. Oh, that's so sad. That is really... Yes, beautifully written, and so many great observations about just how blooming awful people can be. But also there are some blooming wonderful people out there too. But yes, it was beautifully written and I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, wonderful read there. You know, I have to say that this is just a powerful write on a difficult subject. And I think that's one of the gifts of being a poet is that we get that privilege of writing about things that make people think, make people talk. And I like how you really touch on, well, on that idea of how oftentimes when people have reached the point of deciding on suicide, that there comes over them this almost like sense of peace. You know, and I really like how there's this struggle to understand one from when there's a struggle there's this realization that you can't get people to understand you. If, like, as people point out, that one stanza, if you're obvious, people want sublime. If you're subtle, they want demand clarity. There's never, it's never good enough for anybody. Never be surprised by how self-serving human beings are encapsulated. At one point or another, we all are aggressive drivers. And that is so true. Even if you don't drive, you have your moments where you have the attitude of an aggressive driver, the anger, you know, where it's all about you. And you know, so just like an absolutely brilliant write and very well done, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tam. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, Tom, this is an incredible write. And I agree with Pam, it was powerful, and I thought it was well done. Your emotions were so well expressed in this. And I have to say, this is my stanza. If you are obvious, people want sublime. If you are subtle, they demand clarity. Just because you choose to walk your own path doesn't guarantee anyone will follow it or even notice you're missing unless you owe them something. I thought that was just very... straight to the point, really. And it was great work. Thanks for bringing it tonight.
Great comments, everybody.
Tom, I got to go with your title, Postmortem of a Suicide. So there's a deeper underlying thought with this, and my guess is it holds something personal in it because of the way you drew out. It's almost kind of a clinical look back after the deed was done. So you look into the life a bit more and the reasons going along with it. And that final line, depression is not the killer, recovery is, offers up that thought. When somebody is wallowed deep in that depression, the idea in the moment isn't suicide because they are so blue, so down, so trodden on, so to speak. But the recovery angle coming out, where you get that little lift of buoyancy in mood, and that kind of solidifies the thought of actually taking that next step. So this does walk that. I like the tone because it looks at it honestly from your perspective, so to speak, afterwards.
Well, I worked a whole lot of suicide lines at one point years ago. And the other thing is, you'll find if you work with when you work with people, depression, when people are really they're too depressed to do anything. But when they get out and they're feeling good about themselves and they start feeling the depression coming on again, they don't want to go back there. They want to die first. So it's really at that point where most suicides occur with people who are depressed is at the point where they're looking at going back down into the hole another time, and they just refuse. Because I've had to talk to people, make all kinds of contracts and deals so that they work on it instead of doing it. And there was a whole spite of ones on the suicide on the web at one point, and I just went, I've had it, I got to write this. And it came out.
Well, it was a perfect piece for it. And well read. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay. And Laurent, I have your piece up next. So if you'd be so kind as to read it for us, that'd be awesome.
Yes, ma'am. This is called Timeline Opens. Her eyes know me. Looking around corners into my shadow places, searching out the laundry bags I hid, stuffed into closets, dirty secrets suitable for cleaning, and smiles. She too has soiled linens. Some things are best cleaned together. Fire purifies, a nova licking at planes of existence, like a flower opening in sequences. She drew me to an interior light when I had no sight, when all was black. Red-haired goddess who rode the tides of lust, full sails into the wind. I was lashed to her mast, laughing eyes flashed with emerald fire. Chrysalis bursts, multifaceted magics emerge. Conjoined firebirds of black and white. We rise together as one, wreathed in cold fire. Universe expands. Timeline opens. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
Well, Laurent, this is an excellent piece. You know, it's how two people come together in some times when they need each other. And they work each other. They help each other get through it. And, you know, I think that it was just really, really well expressed. Beautiful imagery, as always. And, you know, great metaphors as well. So, great job.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Jean. And, Bob, how about you?
Well, I love the bit about dirty laundry. Yeah, we all have some. The trick is to know somebody you trust enough to share it with, and then to work on cleaning it up together. That's an incredible statement. And then the passion, the way that out of that level of trust, everything else follows in a way that makes great sense, but also makes you want to see it work. And I like the way you use the magic, the sense of her being both the siren and the savior. I was lashed to her mast, laughing eyes, flashed with emerald fire. I mean, this is really good because it catches it even after we've decided we trust someone and we want to share things with them. Not all emotions are pure. Not all are necessarily coherent. And you did a great job of showing even as much as there's a central thought and a goal. There's a lot of confusion in the process, a lot of insanity. I really like this. It's very, very well done.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent, Tom. Thank you. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is a wonderful write. I really like how Jean mentioned the idea of the togetherness, the, you know, two people coming together and healing together and growing together. I particularly like this is wonderful imagery and metaphors throughout. I'm particularly drawn to the use of searching out the laundry bags I had stuffed into closets, dirty secrets suitable for cleaning. I like that you took such a mundane task as cleaning out a closet, as doing the laundry, and used it as a metaphor for being willing to, you know, be, you know, open and honest and clean everything up. But I also really liked I was lashed to her mast. That idea of the guy who had tied it to the mast of the ship so that he wouldn't be tempted to go into the sirens, you know. I think that was right? It was something like that. But
Ulysses.
You know, yeah, it's that idea to me of somebody who is your grounding, your you know, your stability. So I just think this is an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Kate, how about you?
Oh, it was beautiful. So many pieces, so many lines that the idea of the laundry bags hiding your past, your secrets, and then finding somebody who understands that we all have that, and shares with you the fact that they have the same kind of things hidden. I thought that was beautiful. My favorite, I think, was like a flower opening in sequences. She drew me to an interior light when I had no sight, when all was black. That's, you know, that is lovely. I enjoyed it all, and I thought it was beautifully written. Yes, thank you for sharing that with us. It was beautiful.
Thank you, Kate.
All right, we're on. I like the notes of mythical quality in this. That thought with the mask, Pam hinted at. I thought of Ulysses in that too, but the thought of the mundane thought with the dirty laundry, the bags stuffed in the closet, and the soiled linens has that nice touch of the skeletons in the closet, so to speak. And that middle stanza, like a flower opening in sequences, she drew me to an interior light when I had no sight, when all was black. It hits on that note of darkness being lost, because then you hit on the thought of the red-haired goddess and then lashed to the mast. So that walks in that nice framework of mythology. And then that thought with the chrysalis burst, multifaceted magics emerge, conjoined firebirds of black and white rise out of the ashes, so to speak. And then the universe expands, the timeline opens. There's that note to new beginnings, the thought of possibilities in the moment.
Nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, I do believe we still have time enough for one more.
Yes, sir. That's what I got. One more here. I have a few more, but I'm going to put up Frank's and Blessed Are the Patriots by Poetic Picasso. So let me just get that in.
From distant shores lies the vast land of the stoic boys of metal marching onto prolific waters in a foreign nation, striving to a weary myth and surgeon. They came from the area of small towns, the emerald valleys of plentiful slopes, the multitude of the vibrant cities, the lactic homesteads of bleak hopes. The eternal home of the stars and stripes, wavering valiantly over the dew of a ground by the rainbow where the staid place exists, and blossoming flowers and sinuous leaves found. Hence the grass grows within the spry spring, beneath the metals of the winding hue, and a lost generation weaned in the prairies strode forth with such determination and will. Behold a heaven of spirits, of renewed men of all colors, battalions that fought for the flag and liberty, given our boys strength amid the roaring cannons, firing in the vowed of the flanks of tenacity. O America, men once sang your interminable glory, and with the innumerable men of great valor and duty, now resting in the teeming mounds guarding their souls, beyond the edges of the swashing seas of beauty. The call to defend you inspired your sons of brethren, whose bodies were strewn in a dreary carnage of death. But no foreign army from abroad will ever conquer you when the young soldiers march with patriotic breath. Give them your blessing amid the dire onslaught, and grant them the reward of victory against our foes. For men in battle strive as a fierce legion of men, with an admirable courage shown in their toils and woes. The dripping blood spilled in the stained field soaked, they long only for the comfort of redemption when dying. As the sons of conviction are embraced in bosoms of angels, sheltering them from bullets as they linger in their crying. Hearken to the dreaded soldiers' voices heard within the depth of the wailing winds of the willows, bearing the coffins with names of faces of all races, as the mournful sound of memorable fields billows. Boys who succumbed and never had returned, as brave and noble men who once heard a call, perishing into the terrible gusts of the wind blowing, where their honourable headstones stand visibly tall. Blessed for the patriots sojourning in the soil, Caden heroes that died within the perilous fray, the indomitable boys of beloved America, and the proud soldiers who vanished far away. Glory! Glory, hallelujah, their truth is marching on in the poem.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for the sound crowd. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Now, that was a wonderful way to kick off a Memorial Day weekend. You know, just a beautiful and powerful tribute to the men and women who served and gave their lives. Great choice, of course, of background music. A wonderful read. Just a powerful and respectful lines, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, how about you?
It's so much as evocative and emotional. And patriotism, their dripping blood soiled and the stained fields soaked. They long only for the comfort of redemption when dying, as the sons of conviction are embraced in bosoms of angels, sheltering them from bullets as they linger in their crying. You see the essential of the thing in the quoted passage, the redemption before death, that that all young men who are dying hope for, and, you know, their life is cut short so quickly, and the cries for the priest, for their mother, ring out in battlefields. You know, the redemption before death, it's so important. I thought the poem was astonishingly effective, giving me a lump in my throat.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. This is full of patriotism and sadness. War has taken our best, our youngest, our strongest, and so many times and so many areas and so many parts of the world, that it is the saddest thing. It is so sad. It makes, I mean, I'm Scottish, so we've been defeated quite a few times, but it was just so full of passion and a great tribute to people who shouldn't have ever had to go through what they went through. And I have always hoped that people would never have to go through that again in our lifetime. And of course, that wish has completely gone out the window, isn't it? So yes, it was really, really, really lovely. And I'm not lovely, but full of passion and very interesting for me, being an outsider. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
Oh, I think that this was just a fabulous tribute. You know, a wonderful piece done by Frank, as always. It's definitely a tribute to those who have lost their lives defending ours. So very well done, Frank, and thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Excellent piece.
Thank you, Jean. And Tom, how about you?
Oh, Tom, he dropped on. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, then I can say that was a fitting piece on closing the show tonight, because this is Memorial Weekend. And like Laurent said, that was quite a powerful voice off of their thing. So thank you very, very much. All right, Jean, coming to you for closing voice.
Okay. Well, everybody, I want to thank you all for calling in tonight. Laurent, Tom, Pam, Kate, Rex, thanks as usual for co-hosting with me. Great job. Great poems tonight. Frank, that piece was fabulous. I'm going to put it in the room so that way you know to listen, because you didn't hear all our comments. I know he can't hear me now either, right? But I want to thank everybody. And definitely thank you all for putting in pieces. I have like three or four pieces that carry over till next Friday. Sorry I didn't get to them. But I don't want to race through anything. I don't want any of us to race through too much. You know, it just isn't fair. And it's sad that we have to do carryovers, because that doesn't seem fair either. But, you know, it's one of those juggles. But, yep, everybody who can, enjoy the show at 12:30 with Babbler and Pam. And, Pam, have a good night. Stay out of trouble. And you all be good. Thanks again.
Okay, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It was a great show. Thank you, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Nighty night.